It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Any idea what's coming for us June 8th? Let me put this in perspective for you.
Mothers interrupt the course of our journey. She's programmed to do that should certain conditions arise. They have. Seems she has intercepted a transmission of unknown origin. She got us up to check it out.
A transmission? Out here?
Yeah.
We've got this far, we must go on. We have to go on.
Ash, can you see this?
And it's full of leathery objects, like eggs or something.
Wait a minute, this movement seems to have life. Organic life.
What happened to Kane?
Something has attached itself to him. We have to get him to the infirmary right away. He could die in 24 hours. Open the hatch.
Oh, no.
Don't touch it! Don't touch it!
We sat down there on company orders to get this thing, which destroyed my crew.
Thank you. That will be all.
God damn it! That's not all! Because if one of those things gets down here, then that will be all. Then all this bullshit that you think is so important, you can just kiss all of that goodbye.
In 1979, director Ridley Scott gave us one of the most frightening sci-fi horror movies ever made. The script was written by Dan O'Bannon. This was the guy that helped John Carpenter make Dark Star in the early 70s. Now, Dan was not impressed with the alien in Dark Star because quite literally it was a beach ball. That's all it was a beach ball. So because of that, he wanted to actually conquer a scary alien sci-fi horror movie, and the script for Alien is what came out of it. It starred Sigourney Weaver, Tom Skerritt, Veronica Cartwright, Henry Dean Stanton, Ian Holm, John Hurt, Yaphet Kotto. It had an excellent cast, some excellent Geiger work. He designed the alien for the movie and the set designs. It was a truly frightening movie. 33 years later, same director, Ridley Scott, is giving us what we believe to be a prequel to that story. To delve into the mythos that was given to us 33 years ago and expanding on what we know. What about the space jockey? What else was on LV-426? How did that ship get down there? Was there anybody there before us? Were the aliens created by another extraterrestrial being as a biological weapon? How was the Weyland-Yutani Corporation involved? What did they know? How did they set up the crew of the first Alien movie? We're hoping that this movie, in a week's time, will answer all of these questions. And for that reason, Prometheus, coming out June 8th, is one of the most anticipated horror movies I can remember in a long, long time. And to honor the fact that Ridley Scott is going back, not just to his roots, but to expand a movie that he championed so long ago, to expand the story for us, to give us fans more of the information of the alien world. I thought this would be an excellent opportunity for the Horror 101 crew to sit down and watch the four movies in the Alien anthology. That's Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection. And that's what we did. That's what this show is going to be on. It's an Alien anthology in preparation for the awesome Prometheus that I'm sure will knock all of our socks off come June 8th.
So,
we wanted to do this alien anthology to the lead up of Prometheus coming out at the beginning of June, which I'm very excited about. But do you think Ridley Scott is going to pull like a Spielberg and just upset us with a new vision that's just going to suck ass?
You mean like the ending to AI?
I mean, is he going to make a PG-13 movie that should be a rated R film? I mean, think about the original Alien. 20th Century Fox picked it up on condition. I think it was Walter Hill that got on board with it. And because Walter Hill got on board with it, they were like, okay, we're going to shoot this movie. Because originally they said, the script is too bloody, we don't want to do this. None of the studios wanted to touch
this. Has too bloody ever been a factor in an Alien movie before?
Yeah, but this was like 1979. I mean, I don't understand the mindset of the studios about this. And even when they finished the movie, the original cut was over 3 hours long, about 3 hours, 20
bloody.
Minutes.
I mean, Bonnie they said it was, too in bloody. The 60s.
They had to tone down the gore. And if you think about it, there's not that much gore in the movie. I mean, besides the chest bursting scene and the mess hall there,
mm-hmm.
And even that you can tell is carefully edited as to not be too excessive. Violent, maybe, like the whole idea of something gestating within you and then just bursting out and it being lethal and just creating a big fucking mess. I mean, yeah, okay, but other than that, there wasn't a lot of gore in the movie. Alien was more of a suspenseful movie. A tasteful, very atmospheric, suspenseful space movie.
Well, many critics at the time called it Jaws in Space.
Mm-hmm.
Not a whole lot of gore in Jaws either, with the exception of the ending when Quint's getting bit in half. And this again was like the kind of violence that we saw in Black Christmas, where it was all pretty well done off camera or left to our imagination.
And that's the scariest part of it right there.
Yeah.
But the alien itself, I really, really liked. I think when Dan O'Bannon was writing the script, I was reading that when he was writing the script, he couldn't think of a reason why the crew just didn't shoot this fucking thing. You know, and of course, like, it would be so easy to do that, and then it would be over, because it's just one alien on the loose on this ship. And he's thinking, why can I not think of a reason that they just can't shoot this thing? And somebody gave him the idea, well, what if it bled acid? They're in deep space, acid eats a hole in the hull, they're all fucked anyway, so... And that's where the idea of it bleeding acid came to. That was the defense mechanism that made sure that you couldn't do bad physical trauma to it, or else it would jeopardize everybody on the ship, which I thought was genius.
Mm-hmm.
I thought was really genius.
Well, especially since these guys, you know, they're freighter operators.
Yep.
You know,
it's a tow ship.
There's no Somali pirates in space, so why would these guys even be armed?
Well, most ships would have a small armory just in case there's some sort of a mutiny or an uprising, or God forbid somebody, you know, you got to figure if you're in deep space for months, if not years at a time, you might be prone to going stir crazy.
Well, I think that's why they freeze them.
Yeah. Or in case your synthetic human happens to run amok, you know, it's always good to have a weapon in that case.
Spoiler alert!
Fucking crap.
Yeah,
the home of Satan's baby.
Hyperdyne. Yeah, 128-2s. Oh, those models always were a little bit twitchy.
Unlike the Hell 9000s, which were very reliable.
What kind of a transmission?
Acoustical beacon that repeats at intervals of 12 seconds.
SOS?
I don't know.
Human?
Unknown.
Let's start from the beginning. Seven crew members on a ship called...
The Nostromo.
The Nostromo. They're towing some fucking thing, this big-ass cargo ship with them on their way home. And they come out of their stasis prematurely because the company they work for want them to seek out this beacon.
Well, that's the thing, though. What I like about this film is it's not a straight-up just survival against a monster film. There is mystery there. There is politics going on.
Yeah.
And I like that there's more to discover than just an alien threat on the ship. That the company knew more than they let on. That their science officer obviously knew more. And that... there is actually something of a mystery there, and the plot thickens. It ends up being less like a 50s B science fiction movie and more like a really good episode of X-Files.
Well, especially when you finally see what the order is, it's almost like they were looking for this. They were waiting for it. They knew what it was out the gate, which plays really well into Prometheus.
Yeah.
Like, it sets itself up for the backstory. Like, Ridley Scott, when he took this, realized that, okay, the company... As soon as they detect the signal, like, you think that they detected the signal before they even left port.
So they get to this planet, they find this derelict ship that's been there for God knows how long, and they find the space jockey. And the space jockey, that's what I'm most excited about right now, is because we know at this time that Prometheus is going to give us the backstory of this ship and that being that's been sitting in that chair for...
That being that's like several times larger than a human and didn't stand much
and
chance.
And you know, after watching this movie and how the alien operates with the chest bursting and all that, that this being was victim to a facehugger at some point. You know what I mean? So, and to find all those aliens in there with that mist, that blue laser-like, which was basically a digital tripwire, I suppose. Like, I mean, all those eggs are dormant until something, if anything, breaks that seal.
Well, it reacts.
They knew it would react to it.
Right. Well, it reacted when he got too close.
Yeah.
When he put his hand near it, then it goes,
psst. It makes sense that they would have a tripwire mechanism, because otherwise the eggs would reach maturity, they'd hatch and starve to death if there was no food in the chamber. So obviously they were sitting there waiting for someone to come along, trip the wire. Oh, it's dinner time. There's something to sustain them now.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I think it was proximity. I think it was him getting too close to it. Because if it was a trip wire, as soon as he fell through it,
they would all...
More than one would have went off. Yeah. But specifically when he puts his hand over top of it, then you hear that, like the seal gets broken.
Yeah.
The locked-in freshness is released.
The concept of the alien itself, I think, is genius. Only because like it goes through several phases... And all of them are just absolutely genius. Like, you got the face hugger that comes from the egg. And it plants itself on your face, and it keeps you alive as it plants this... I guess it would be...
Embryo, yeah.
Some sort of an embryo or an organism in your chest that gestates. And then when it's about ready to pop out, you die.
I mean, yeah, it plays a more than just the aliens there to eat you or kill you, which would be enough. But there is an undercurrent of, I think... sexual kind of messaging that really puts you off kilter. And anyone who's ever seen the work of H.R. Giger or Geiger, I'm not entirely sure how you would pronounce it.
You've
always said Giger.
I think it's Giger.
Yeah.
I like Geiger, it just sounds better.
You ever look at his artwork, it is definitely sexualized.
Oh, yeah.
So, but you get this... It's
a lot of tubular things going into, you know, like hot dog going through a donut kind of deal.
Yeah. But I mean, it's not enough that it kills you, but that it violates you. It actually impregnates you, which is terrifying that it can impregnate anything. So you get this kind of sexual domination almost that is even worse than just being outright shredded.
And the alien itself is very phallic. I mean, the head is one giant penis.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to be crass, I guess it's one big long phallic symbol. To be honest, his original, he had to go through several phases of designing the alien because he kept saying, "Here's my alien," and they're like, "That looks like a giant dick. Do it again." So when they finally, like, we're looking at the final product going, "Yeah, that's pretty phallic. Just imagine that." This was the one that they said, "Okay, we can use this one." The ones before that were way too phallic. They were like, "No, we can't use that. What are you doing?" And he's like, "This is my work." Well, to be honest, out of all the Alien movies, I would suggest that the alien in this movie looks the most slick. It's black. Yes. It's shiny. It's just, it looks perfect, for lack of a better term.
And, I mean, they obviously wrote the script around the model's lack of mobility. Like, you never really see it too agile.
No.
They cut it very well to cover up its limitations.
That was by design, too.
Right. Whereas in the second movie, it's such a thrill to be able to see them crawling along walls and ceilings and see them en masse and swarming like insects. The level of movement is what sells the second movie.
Yes. The actor that sat, and here's a little bit of a trivia for you, Peter Mayhew, who played Chewbacca.
Yes. Right?
He was known for playing large characters only because he was so huge. He originally was supposed to get the part, and this South African guy that they met in a bar nearby got the part because he was 7 feet tall and he was really, really thin. And when they got sight of him, they're like, "This guy's perfect for who we need to get into this suit." And when they finally got this guy in the suit, he couldn't sit down. They had to make him like a makeshift swing for when he was in downtime, because once you're in the suit, you can't get out. I mean, you're stuck in the suit until the shoot is over. He couldn't sit down because of the tail that was on the rig, so they gave him a makeshift swing that he could kind of prop himself down in and relax it, because he couldn't sit in a conventional chair.
What the fuck is going on? Hey! Hey! All right. Press it when I give an order. I expect to be obeyed.
Even if it's against the law?
You're goddamn right!
Oh, and just for you, Brian Stewart, I read up today that Veronica Cartwright there, the girl that plays Lambert, the blonde in this movie.
Okay.
I remember seeing the edition that you had.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in Alien where Kane has the facehugger on his face, and Lambert and Dallas are outside, and they're requesting entrance, and Ripley won't let him in because of medical protocol.
Quarantine,
exactly.
Right.
And finally, Ash opens the door against her orders, lets him in, and when Lambert next sees Ripley, she fucking hauls off and starts beating on her. And when I was watching it, I'm thinking, that seems actually pretty genuine.
Yeah.
And they shot it 3 or 4 times with the blows not being real. So right. Finally, after a few takes, Ridley Scott told Lambert, or Veronica said, don't hold back. I want you to hit her. So when she's beating on her, she's really cracking her in the face.
Wow.
Yeah. So when you see when they pull her off, like, you can see her fucking hair go because she really cracked her in the face. Just one of those things where it's like, you know, yeah, okay, today you're going to get really beaten in the head. You know, if I asked you to take a punch, you'd have to think about it, and I'm your friend.
Yeah.
You know, if your boss said, okay, I'm going to have this guy smack you as hard as he can in the face, you'd be like, whoa, what do you mean? What are you talking about here?
Well, this might be apocryphal. I'm not sure exactly where I heard it from, but I could have swore it was in, like, a making-of thing that I watched back in the day. But the part where the chestburster actually comes out, that whole scene, they didn't clue in Veronica Cartwright.
She didn't, no.
They just told her there would be a little blood, you know, nothing particular. Right. But the part where she reacts is because she was just expecting like a little bit, like the spurt here and there. She, if you look, she gets a fucking jet right in the face. Like she just gets sprayed. So she catches her completely by surprise. So that look of shock when she's reacting is reacting to, I was not expecting this.
Right.
You know.
When they
kind of like a surprise facial.
That scene was shot in one take using 4 different cameras, and by the time they yelled cut, that actress, she was upside down with her boots in the air. Just shocked and stunned at what had just happened.
They did not fully clue her in on what, because everybody else had something to do in that scene. Like, so Yaphet Kotto and Harry Dean Stanton were like, you know, trying to hold him down, right. Scared, so they're trying to put. So they're all trying to, but she was just kind of standing there. So she was just expecting, you know, like to a reaction, but she just gets nailed with this jet of fake blood and just freaks.
The chest bursting scene from Alien, it definitely goes as one of those chief moments in horror that's immortal. It's classic, it's really, really well done, and the cast was told, they were told, this is kind of what's going to happen,
right.
Okay? They were told what's going to happen, and they must have knew something was up, because in that set, John Hurt, just his arms and his head were sticking out, and the body that he had was fake, so they must have knew that something was up. But when he gives that scream, you know, because he's convulsing, and what's his name again? The black guy?
Yaphet Kotto.
Thank you. I'm going to point at you. Whenever I point at you, you say his name, because for the life of me, I can't remember it.
I always remember Yaphet Kotto as Alonzo Mosley from Midnight Run.
And he was the dream teacher in Nightmare on Elm Street 6.
He was the James Bond villain in Live and Let Die, the first Roger Moore film. Yeah.
But if he, him trying to subdue Kane and put that fucking spoon in his mouth, that seemed genuine to me. Like, he was really trying to wrestle him. And the camera's out over here, and just to see the guy, and he arches his back and just lets out this fucking
blood-curdling scream, and then
and
just
poof!
That's the first, the first
this poof of red
and
comes
stops.
Out. And everybody just looks like, what
the like
fuck is that?
Like 5 seconds where he's, you know, perfectly
and then
still,
he's,
everybody's perfectly still, like, what?
And then he convulses again.
Yeah.
He starts, and they're like, okay, we gotta do something.
It's one of the hardest notes to hit well in horror, and that's the death scene. There are no small parts, only small actors. And if all you have to do in the scene is get eviscerated by the creature, there are so many things to factor in. Like, I mean, how hard you're being hit, I mean, I mean, how you actually feel at that moment, your level of suspense, are you caught by surprise? I mean, all these little elements, because if it's not perfect, you don't buy it.
No.
And death is one of the hardest things to sell. How long are you alive afterwards? Are you going to be gurgling? I mean, all these little things. Like, for instance, one of the scenes, and there's always the cliched moment where people live long enough to, you know, utter one last important phrase, right? But if you can sell it, like, you look at Sean Connery in The Untouchables. His death scene, I think they shot Sean Connery for that movie, I swear to God. When he's sitting there, and of course he's going to utter the cliched line telling them where to find the bookkeeper, but because he sells it so well, we buy it. You know, and I think John Hurt, even though he knows he's going to be the first one out of this film, he's the first one gone.
He went out well. Like,
he does.
When he screams and then he's silenced right as the thing pops,
yeah.
I feel really bad for him.
I mean,
and then the fact that he keeps convulsing, like, you. If you were to watch that movie for the first time, you would think for that split second when that pop of red comes up, you think, okay, he's dead.
He's dead.
And yeah. Then he starts fucking moving again. And you're like, no, he's not dead. Maybe this isn't the end. And then it comes out and fucking blood's everywhere. And everybody just freaks right the fuck out. They had to do that that shot in one take using four cameras.
Yeah.
And that was the result. It worked. Everybody did their job correctly. And by the time it was all done, everybody was just sitting there shocked. Covered in blood, and the director, I could almost envision in my mind Ridley Scott going cut and just busting a fucking gut looking at the looks on these actors' faces as all this was going on.
Well, what really sells me on that death scene is even after, like, it finally fully comes out of his chest, there's the moment where, like, they're just doing a close-up shot of the alien, and you can still see his hand, like, just the...
Yeah.
You know, it's that post-death...
That involuntary stutter.
He's like, you know, just sit there twitching.
And then after that, the fact that this organism grows exponentially, like within hours, it's bigger than a human.
Yeah.
And it's in full hostile mode. It bleeds acid that can... cut through bulkheads like it's Swiss fucking cheese on a hot summer day.
It's perfection.
It is a perfect organism.
Because just one of those things managed to wipe out my entire crew in less than 24 hours. And if the colonists have found that ship, then there's no telling how many of them have been exposed. Do you understand?
Second one, I suppose it has horror elements to it, but it would be more of an action film.
I agree.
Yeah, there's definitely a big genre change between the first and the second movie. First one's a horror. Second one's, I would say, more of a thriller, sci-fi, action movie.
The third one goes back to horror, I think.
The third one goes back to suspense because it goes back to its roots in the way that there's only one alien involved and they're all unarmed.
But the violence goes up, the body count goes up. It's more like an alien slasher movie, the third one. Aliens 2 wasn't... It really knocked it out of the park for me. It was not just bigger and better, it was something entirely... It was an entirely new movie. I mean, you almost didn't need the first movie to really appreciate the second one at all. And it stands on its own, even if you don't, you know, compare it to the first movie. So I, you know what, it may be the first time I'm going to say, give credit to the sequel.
Aliens.
Yeah.
You know, I would agree with you on it, like... As I watch Alien, I appreciate it for, you know, like Dan O'Bannon's work, and I recognize that he made Dark Star in the early 70s with John Carpenter, and the alien in that movie was literally just a beach ball.
Yeah.
You know, and he was really upset with the way that turned out, that he turned his writing to making a honest-to-God, truly terrifying monster movie in space. And that's what that, and it's because of his work on Dark Star that I think he created Alien. And I think Alien had everything going. The Giger work, the cast, the director was good. Like, everything was solid on Alien.
Yeah.
But because I'm at the age where I'm at, I grew up with Aliens. And, I mean, Aliens is just an epic action movie. It was right up there with Commando and Die Hard. You know, just those epic 80s action flicks that we were just gobbling up when we were growing up kids. And I fell in love with Aliens. Even I'm pretty sure I had watched Aliens even before I saw the original. You know what I mean? Because I wasn't into horror when I was young enough. Because Aliens came out in the theater like 85, 86. And I got it on VHS like 9 months after that. So when I was 10 years old and I was just starting to get into horror, I hadn't seen Alien, but Aliens was the new thing.
Yeah.
And back when I was younger, I always liked the brand new movies. I had to know the brand new movies. Plus, I remember my mom, she went to see Aliens with her boyfriend at the time. I remember her coming home going, "Wow, that was wow." And I'm like, "Really? You enjoyed that?" And she's like, "It was like wow."
It's inside the complex.
Oh, you're just reading me.
No, it ain't you. They're inside the perimeter. They're in here.
Hudson, stay cool. Vasquez?
Hudson may be right.
Get back, both of you!
The signal's weird. Must be some interference or something. There's movement all over the place!
Get back to operations!
It's game time.
Aliens will always have a special place in my heart, because the same thing like Channel 20, you know, it was like the Saturday afternoon movie, you know, like you'd be sitting there flipping the channels, and at least every so many months Aliens would be on. I don't know if the rights to it were cheap, right. And you figure this is probably the first really big budget movie that James Cameron had after the Terminator.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he owned this movie. Like, he took something that was, you know, Ridley Scott and James Cameron are completely different directors.
Yeah.
And he took the ball and ran with it. And to me, Aliens is not just one movie. Like, the tone of it shifts. Because when it starts off, it's got the creepy element. They're going into the, you know, what happened to all these people. They're going into the nest to try and find it. And then suddenly, like, you go from having, like, this whole platoon of army guys that's whittled down. And then it becomes a survival movie.
Yeah.
Because then they're barricading themselves and the scary monsters are at the gate. And then after that, then it shifts from that to being a, okay, crap, you know, shit's going to blow up. We got to get out of here as soon as possible. So it's really, like, the movie shifts in tone three times.
And then it was Commando.
Yeah. And then suddenly it's her going out, and, you know, it's, and then it suddenly becomes one-man army. So yeah. It's a hell of a ride.
We're almost there. Hang in there, okay?
I know!
Hurry!
I know!
I mean it!
Scene where they're cutting through the floor to get to Newt, and she's waist high in the water, and the motion detector's going, and she, Ripley's like, she's telling Hicks, you better hurry up. He's like, I know, I mean it, I know. And the sound's just getting, the sound of that, those things getting closer.
The sound of the motion detector was, I don't know who got the sound or where they got it from, but it was perfect. There is no other sound, and I've never even heard it again in other movies. That's how core and central that sound effect was, and an industry that recycles every sound effect.
No, they've recycled the score from the Aliens movie.
Yeah.
Because it was James Horner, I believe, that the score
I
was
think
it?
You're, yeah, so. I think so.
But the sound of the motion detector has never been duplicated again. It's only ever in Aliens.
Well, right at the end when it's there and she's telling her, Newt, just stay calm. And you can hear her. She's still talking to her. And sure enough, the one just... It just ascends from the water right behind her, and she turns around. And it's almost like slow motion as this thing's just bearing down on her. You just hear the scream, and that
stops.
Was it.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
I'm pretty sure if we could rewind back to 1986 and watch this in the theater on opening night, that would be the scene right there. Where the whole audience would just go nuts. You don't get that very often in a movie anymore. I remember being a kid and something would happen and everybody would just go, ah! There's no wow factor anymore for audiences. Maybe, I don't know if we're all wasted or something like that, but I guarantee you, if anybody saw that in the theater on opening night and they didn't know what was happening, when that fucking thing came up on the water behind that little girl, you heard a lot of...
Yep.
I think it's fair to say that our smoothly running facility has suddenly developed a few problems. I can only hope we are able to all pull together over the next few days until the rescue arrives for Lieutenant Ripley.
It's here!
here. We got quantum.
Stop this, Ravy, at once.
I'm
stop
telling
it.
You. It's here. It's here.
Get that foolish woman back to the infirmary. Move it! Help me!
Fuck! The only thing I didn't like about Alien 3 is Alien 3 wasn't made at the correct time. I think if they waited maybe 3 or 4 years when the CGI was better, because the Alien in Alien 3 looked like kife. I didn't like it at all. It was all CGI, and this was back when CGI, it was in the infancy of CGI. This was pre Jurassic Park. Remember I was mentioning
actually,
Jurassic Park?
The majority of the Alien work in Alien 3 was actually puppetry.
Not when it's running around and shit.
Yeah. Like, no. The part where you see it, like, when it comes out of the, well, depending on which cut you see, either the ox or the dog, like, when you see it kind of shaking off the, and kind of going, like, running around. For most of those scenes, I actually watched the making of. It was, like, a little miniature animatronic, like, not even animatronic, just literally, like, guys with sticks animating it.
Really?
Yeah, so a lot of that was chroma key.
See, what I liked about the third movie was that it knew that what it had to do. It couldn't be bigger than the second movie, because you can't go bigger than James Cameron. And they knew that they couldn't recapture the feel of the original. So all you could do was try and bring it back to its roots in a different way.
The suspenseful roots.
Right. So you take it back to a thriller. So instead, you up the body count in an enclosed space, and you make everyone even more vulnerable. You have a crew that's not even armed with flamethrowers or anything. They've got, like, primitive tools and pickaxes.
It's also the most nihilistic movie I have ever seen. Even the robot.
Well, no, Sweeney Todd's pretty nihilistic. That's where I drew the line.
Did the sensors pick up anything moving around on the ship prior to separation?
It's very dark here, Ripley. I'm not what it used to be.
Just tell me. Does the recorder indicate anything? Was there an alien on board?
Yes.
But no, but even when you get the robot, the one that was like all, even in like, you know, they bring through Bishop from the second one, and he's like, in the second one, he's like, you know, cheery, helpful, you know, supposed to be the kinder, gentler robot. Yeah. He's like, well, I'll never be top of the line again. I'd rather be nothing.
Yeah, now he's like the manipulative G-Man from Half-Life coming in at the end to try and screw her. And, you know, yeah.
You didn't like his ear flapping?
Oh no, I like
what
that.
Are you doing? No! Nobody can scream no like Lance Henriksen.
Yeah,
no!
The best ear injury.
I think you peaked a little on
oh,
that one.
Fuck.
That's like solid blue. Look at that.
Let me see if I have this correct, Lieutenant. It's an 8-foot creature, some kind with acid for blood, and it arrived on your spaceship. It kills on sight and is generally unpleasant. And of course, you expect me to accept all this on your word.
No, I don't expect anything.
Quite a story, Mr. Aaron.
Right, sir. It's a beauty.
All right, you guys ready for Resurrection?
Yep.
No.
Always.
Okay. I press play anyway.
Ever since we watched Alien 3.
Okay, what don't you like about it? Okay, let's.
There's a.
We'll just clap this right here. Where? What don't you like about Resurrection? This is before we watch it, because we'll discuss it a bit after we watch it, and then I can fucking start editing this together and put this to bed.
Sigourney Weaver has sex with an alien.
No, she doesn't.
No, she doesn't.
Doesn't she?
No.
Isn't there like an implied sex scene?
No. No, you're so ignorant.
No.
That's all you got?
No. Well, apart from that, it was a very silly story. The fact that they were... Well, I mean...
You're losing it. Everything you got against this movie, it's just flying out the fucking window.
The alien-human hybrid, I thought, was a ridiculous concept.
Okay,
fact that they had to clone her... Why would they bother cloning her? She was just an employee. She wouldn't have the memories of the clone.
Well, that's... Let's just say...
Yeah.
Plot hole number 73 on this movie. But, I will admit, even if you look at it just like as a no-brainer, kind of one-off on it, I'm with this movie up until the appearance of the snot monster. I will not call it a hybrid. It's a fucking snot monster.
Its death, by the way, is one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen on film.
That was probably one of my happiest moments, is just it dying.
Yeah. But that look on Sigourney's face, like she was kind of like didn't know how to feel, and she has that look of anguish and loss and whatever, kind of all bundled together.
Oh,
and
Brad Dourif, also.
Brad Dourif, yes. A beautiful butterfly. It's
but like he was so over.
Silence that
was. I hate to say it, Brad Dourif was overacting.
That was during the whole intro to the snot monster. That's where it falls apart.
Yeah.
like I said, they had me with this movie. I accepted a lot of its flaws, but that was just this.
Dan and Dan die too quickly. If you're going to have Dan and Dan in the movie, why have him die in the first 3 minutes of the action?
You know what the greatest travesty of all is with this movie? Screenplay by Joss Whedon.
Oh! But you know what? He can't write screenplays.
Oh, no, like, and the dialogue is punchy. That's part of the saving grace of it is up until that point, the dialogue, like, even, oh, what's his name? The one guy that they found who had been facehuggered, but it hadn't come out of him yet.
Oh, yeah, I know you're talking, The guy that was forced to fuck the prostitute.
He played Purvis in an episode of Voyager.
Yeah, he played the hologram that went nuts. Yeah, I'm just trying to remember his name right now.
For the sci-fi fans out there.
What the fuck is inside me?
Exactly, yeah.
What's in fucking inside me?
The parasite! Oh, now we're
there's a monster in your chest. These guys hijacked your ship, and they sold your cryo tube to this human, and he put an alien inside of you.
And it's real fucking nasty, and in a few hours it's gonna pop out, and you're gonna die. There. Now you know. Do you feel better?
There's a lot of things about this movie that are okay, like the dialogue is punchy, it's a lighter take on it. It doesn't have the same suspense or...
But it's not as solidly put together third movie. The third movie, I thought, was a much better thriller.
Well, don't forget, the third movie... Well, don't forget, we watched the... Before Fincher got his hands on it cut. That was a fucking train wreck.
Yeah.
The thing about Resurrection, I remember going to the theater, watching it, and I went in going, thank Christ they made another one, because I thought after three, it was over. I mean, how could they continue? After three, I mean, I don't want to spoil three, but... I mean, like you said, three's a pretty much that's it. Like, case fucking closed, end of file, it's done. You know what I mean? And then they made another one, and Sigourney Weaver was going to be in it, and I'm like, thank Christ they made this movie. So I watched it, and I came out of the theater going, wow, that was different, but goddamn was that entertaining. Yeah. It was a comic book style movie.
Yeah.
Almost like Sin City. I mean, you watch Sin City, and there's like plot holes in that, and it's silly as all shit, but it was well made, and had a good cast, and it was entertaining.
Yeah. Now, did they even explain in the fourth one? Because I don't remember.
Well, you're going to
maybe
find
blocking
out.
It out. But did they even bother explaining why they're bothering to recreate all of these aliens, or what they're creating them for?
Yeah, well, it's all down to the same premise: the fucking company, which I guess is still
this time.
All...
It's not even the company.
No, it's the military
now. Yeah,
the military. They know that. Well, I mean, to give that away gives away the end of the third movie.
The aliens escape way too easily. It's like they didn't prepare well enough.
No.
It was a really shoddily put together facility, considering how much they knew about the aliens. For them to escape as easily as they did was just idiotic.
Yeah, but you gotta understand, this is like 200 years after anybody had even laid eyes on one of these beings. So yeah, they had data, but 2 centuries went by.
Yeah, but just one alien, given the fact that they have acidic blood and, you know, certain abilities and a certain amount of strength, they should be able to build the ideal cage for it.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time...
Well, again, you know, they're also building cages based on the lowest common bidder, right? Who's the lowest bidder? You know, so.
All right. But
I don't know. It just... And then again, I understand, too, that if they did everything right in Jurassic Park, it would have been a 20-minute tour and the movie would have been over.
So, Alien Resurrection at a 1 from 10...
Yeah, I'm going to give it a solid 4.
4.
I think it's a fail, but there's some things I like.
I enjoy this more than most Michael Bay movies, so I'll give it a 6.
I'll give it a 6.5, only because, like I said, it is entertaining, and I like the cast. Besides Winona Ryder, go fuck yourself, Winona Ryder, I don't like you.
But the cast members I like die quickly, so...
Well, that's why I'm only getting it 6.5 instead of 7.5. There's not enough Brad Dourif.
Not enough Michael Wincott, not near enough.
There's just a little bit of really nice bomb.
Well, you know what, though? Yeah. You say there's not a Brad Dourif, I'll agree, but except the stuff we do get of Brad Dourif is too much. You know, it's Brad Dourif being incredibly weird.
I always say you could take the best actor or actress on Earth and give them bad writing, and you're not going to like them. You know what I mean? You take this, and you could take a bad actor or actress, give them incredible writing, and all of a sudden you like them. It all depends on the script that they're given to read.
Yeah. And there's some pretty horrible dialogue in this movie.
Oh, you beautiful butterfly.
This will explain a lot, too. Surprisingly enough, the budget for this movie was only $70 million.
You know, the other thing I would take it too, why is the F word this movie is completely unnecessary? Yeah. And everybody uses it. It feels like a high school writer that just got to first year university
especially
writing.
Winona Ryder.
We could use the F word now. We're in university.
I'll admit, it was weird seeing Winona Ryder swear.
Fuck you. We're not leaving him here.
You're a thing.
A construct. They grew you in a fucking lab.
Yeah, yeah. And every time she uses the F word, it's like she's a kid in a playground. She's like, it's fucking cyborg. Yeah. You're fucking lab.
Or it's like,
lab.
Fork, fuck. You know, when you try to change the word for fork.
You're fucking.
If you bring in the Alien versus Predator movies, this thing practically shines.
Oh, yeah, this is Shakespeare.
Yeah, I know the guys in the Dark Discussions wanted us to discuss Aliens versus Predator a little bit.
Two rated R franchise movies and you mash them together to make a PG-13 movie just to bring in additional audience members, then you're going to get crap. You know, it's like if they took Lethal Weapon and combined it with Rambo and came up with a PG-13, like, wacky kind of kid, you know, teenage movie. I would probably want to kill myself.
Well, usually a dead giveaway, because both for the first Alien vs. Predator and the second one, Requiem, I saw interviews with the directors. The first one was Paul W.S. Anderson, and the second one was the brother Strauss, who also did that Skyline movie.
But Paul W.S. did Event Horizon, which was a good movie.
I'm on the fence on that one. The scariest thing about that movie was the bloody ship.
Yeah, the ship. Well, and Samuel.
I thought... After he turned into, like, crazy eyeless Sam Neill.
Cenobite Sam Neill.
He was overacting.
Aliens vs. Predator. I liked the first one. It brought in Lance Henriksen, and it was nice to see him back in an alien-esque movie. And he even plays Yutani, right? Doesn't he?
No, he plays Waylon.
He plays Waylon. But the thing about, just like, the snot monster, this movie, the snot monster ruins it for you.
Oh, yeah.
For me, Aliens vs. Predator, when I watched one alien take out two Predator, I'm like, no, that's not the way it's supposed to go. They weren't even taken off guard.
No, they were just ripped apart.
You know,
when you consider that this was supposed to be a trial, you know, for them, and this was something they were born and bred to do, they were pretty inept at it, you know.
Yeah.
And Aliens vs. Predator Requiem, you know, it started out with the facehuggers attacking the father-son duo in you know, like this backwoods, nice, tranquil part of Earth. And that was kind of unsettling because I'd never seen the aliens in like an earthly setting. You know what I mean? Like, I always wondered what it would be like to put the aliens on Earth and see how they would just run amok on the surface. And they gave us that. And then, you know, I forget who it was, but the main character was this girl that was coming back from Iraq or something like that. And I just did not give two squirts of piss about this character at all. They didn't build her up to be likable. They didn't build her up. You didn't care about her at all. And I walked out of that movie going, I didn't give two squirts of piss for anybody in that movie at all. And it was just, for that to happen, it's just horrible writing.
Oh, yeah. You know, I feel the same with a number of movies where if you can't have somebody that can represent the audience, be the moral compass, be somebody that we can get behind, it's one of the reasons why I had real problems with Brian De Palma's Scarface. I couldn't stand the movie because there was no one for me to root for in that movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic movie. Everyone loves it, and Al Pacino's great in it, but it doesn't hold a candle to Carlito's Way. At least there was a character I had some respect for.
Look, let's just bug out and call it even, okay? What are we talking about this for?
I say we take off and nuke the entire site for Morbid. It's the only way to be sure.
Fucking A.
If you had to pick from all the Alien franchise, what's the one thing that stands out for you guys?
Ooh, that's a great question.
Like, what is it that, like, a signature scene, what's your favorite?
Cash can start.
You know what? Just the way it was done, I know I said this before, but when the final onslaught at the end of Aliens, when they're making their final stand and there's still Hudson and Vasquez and Gorman left, when all these, they're all dropping from the ceiling and they're just spraying these things, trying to keep them off them. And Hudson's going nuts. Yeah. And he's just firing away at these things. Come on, motherfucker. Die, motherfucker. Hey, you want some of this? Fuck you. And then the floor underneath them gives way because these aliens just take the floor out from underneath them.
Yeah.
And he comes down and he's still yelling. Even though they got a hold of him, he's still yelling at him. Fuck you.
Fuck you!
Come on, let's go! Like, Hicks and Vasquez are trying to pull him up,
And right at the end, he's screaming, and you just see this one alien hand reach around and grab him by the face, and that's the last you see of him. But not only that, like right then it cuts to a scene shooting up at Hicks, and Vasquez is tugging on him, saying, "Look the fuck behind you." And he has enough time just to kind of put his pulse rifle up and put a few rounds into an alien that's mid fucking pounce on him. Yeah. That whole scene right there was just so wonderfully done.
My favorite scene from all of the movies is in the first one. It's when Yaphet Kotto and Veronica Cartwright are getting the bottles, like getting the extra coolant for the life pod so they can leave. And then all you see is the shadow come across. And then she sees just that whole scene when it's like, you know, he's trying to tell her to get out of the way and she's paralyzed with fear, you know, and then it kills Yaphet Kotto, and then, you know, see her standing there, and then that scream. Like, you see the tail coming up between her legs.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Ripley, and then you just hear the scream over the monitor, and then it cuts.
It's not just the scream, it's that fucking noise, like like the girl at the beginning of Jaws there, when she's getting eaten, you can hear she's hyperventilating, and you're like, what the fuck is happening to her? And then she goes under the water. You hear all this, like, mangled, you know, like, you know that something really bad is happening to that character, and Ripley's all alone going through the corridor, like you said, and you can hear it going through the ship's monitors, and you're like, oh my god.
And then the sudden realization that comes with that scene that now she's the only one.
Yeah.
You know, that sudden realization that everybody else is dead, it's only me.
I would agree with Nick that that's probably the most terrifying, like isolated, terrifying part right there, is watching Ripley listen to this, having to listen to this and realize she is completely alone, she's on her own, she has to deal with this and get the fuck out of there.
See, now my favorite may it's going to be on par with that one at the very least, but again, even though I like the second one, I think it edges the first one out just slightly.
For entertainment value, I would say yes.
My favorite scene is still in the first movie, and it's right at the end. It's when Ripley realizes she has the alien on board, and she formulates the plan, you know, and she realizes what she has to do, and her getting into that spacesuit one step at a time is just so excruciatingly suspenseful, because they drag that out. It's like, it is so painful to watch, and she's trying to keep herself calm, because she knows if this thing wakes up and is fully realizes she's there, she's dead. There's nothing she can do. She's got no arms. She's got nothing. All she has is this plan. And she's just trying to keep herself calm enough to execute it. And it is just... It must take, what, 3-4 minutes for that whole scene? It is just pure suspense. And I know how it ends. And every time I watch that scene, it still gets to me.
And that's good writing.
It is, yeah. And good writing. And again, another scene that's done largely in silence. And I'm a sucker for any scene that can use lack of sound well. And when all you do is, when you drain the sound away to just her trying to keep herself calm with that song of hers, and when you can strip it down to just bare emotion like that, it is so effective.
You sent them to that ship.
You're wrong.
I just checked the colony log. Directive dated 6-12-79, signed Burke, Carter J. You sent them out there, and you didn't even warn them. Why didn't you warn them, Burke?
So, now we've seen Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, Alien Resurrection... And now, what comes next?
Prometheus.
So, a prequel, I guess
we could call it. Yeah. Now he's saying it's not a prequel. It started as a prequel, now it's something more than a prequel. That's what Ridley Scott is saying, so I don't know what that means.
Well, I think...
It still predates, so I don't know what else it could be.
I'm being very careful not to... Like, I've seen that trailer that we've all seen and loved, and I want to keep it just like that. I don't want anything else. I don't want to read any reviews. I don't want any spoilers. I don't want any, like, big-ass international trailers that come out 10 days before the movie that pretty much show you everything that you're going to get. I want to go in fresh, thinking... I already know that they're going to describe the space jockey. And to be honest, that... The mythos of the space jockey is big for veteran Alien fans. You know what I mean? Like, if you walk up to somebody and say, what do you think about the space jockey from Alien... Most people are going to look at you like, what the fuck are you talking about? But an Alien fan's going to be like, oh, it's fucking cool. I always wanted to know what the hell that is. we're going to find out exactly what that is. I just hope it's not like 5 seconds of the movie and it's gone. I hope they actually show it alive and mobile. You know what I mean?
My fear is that, I'm hoping this doesn't happen, but that it'll take the same route that the new Star Trek film did, where it's not a prequel so much as a reboot. And I hope they're not going to take this as a chance to change the timeline and start a new franchise. Which, I would rather see it just stop with the background information we never had all these years.
So you hope they don't destroy Vulcan, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
And that's it. The Alien Anthology is done. We can't wait for this Friday. We're going to go check out Prometheus and hopefully get another piece to this great puzzle that is the Alien legacy that we've known for the last 33 years. It's been a great ride. Until the next time, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's going to scare the shit out of you. And hopefully it's Prometheus, June 8th. Keep your fucking sticks on the ice. We're out of here.